Welcome to Recovery Stories Yukon. The purpose of this podcast is to break stigmas, bring hope, and show that recovery is possible within our communities. On the show today, we have Desiree Blackjack. She is 43 years old from Little Salmon Carmax First Nation, and her sobriety date is August 26th, 2021. Welcome, Desiree.
Thank you.
Please start anywhere you'd like with your story.
I'll start with my First Nation name is Thikachua. I was given my First Nation's name by my grandmother, Bessie Blackjack. She said that the name came from a strong, independent Native woman who did everything on her own. My English name is Desiree Blackjack. I have two beautiful daughters, Tanisha and Kira. We have a dog, Yowen, a cat, Ebony, and two fish. So that's our little family. My grandparents, like I said, my grandma's Bessie Blackjack. My grandfather's Roddy Blackjack. My grandpa is a legacy in the Yukon. He is well known for all the work he has done for his people, fighting for our self-government and for our rights as First Nations people. He was chief of LSCFN for 14 years. He taught me a lot about leadership. What I do today in my life, I really look up to my grandpa and his teachings. So I'm very honored to have such beautiful grandparents that I had. They were the closest to me. They were the ones that showed me what love really is and how to be loved. My grandma was the backbone of our family. She held us all together and gave us unconditional love. I grew up engulfed in our culture. We would spend every summer at fish camp. We always had fresh meat, fresh berries. We worked together to harvest, and there was always enough for us for the winter months. I was happy on the land, and I was very happy when I was with my grandparents. Going back to the beginning, I don't know who my real dad is. All I know is that he's a Frenchman from Nova Scotia. I was able to connect with a first cousin, and then I was able to connect with a couple aunties. So I know that my dad is still alive, but I feel fulfilled. I found what I was looking for. And just being in connection with my first cousin and now an aunt, it's good enough for me. So that connection has been made. And I feel like I know more of who I am now than I did growing up, because there was always that void and that curiosity and that wonder there. And because of that, I support my daughter's relationships with their dads. So I learned in my family of origin, we could be anyone we aspire to be. One thing my parents always told me was that we could be anything we wanted to be. So I learned to work hard for what I wanted and that I could accomplish anything I set my mind to. I was raised to be confident. I had my first job aside from babysitting at the age of 14. And I received my first paycheck and loved earning and having my own money. So I've always worked since then. I pride myself in being a hard worker. I was taught survival skills in the forest as well as survival skills in civilization. I was raised to be fiercely independent, to never have to rely on a man for anything we need. I love that I can always have my own back. On the flip side, what I learned about self-worth is that I'm pretty but not beautiful. I was taught to protect myself at a young age, which later came in handy when I started getting into my addictions. I was always a target for a lot of women when I was drinking, because I think I was, I don't know, too bubbly, I guess, too happy. I lived in a glass house. Everything was perfect looking in from the outside. We were complimented often on how beautiful our family was and how well-behaved all of us kids were. We did have some great times, which is why I grew up feeling so confused. A lot of hardships in our home as well. There's violations that happened that were kept very hush-hush and started to come out when I was in counseling. I started counseling when I was 25. We weren't taught to talk about our feelings growing up. And I believe that's a trait with a lot of our First Nation families because of residential school. It used to take me 3 days to figure out what was wrong, why I was feeling the way I was feeling sometimes. But counseling really helped to connect with myself. It took quite a bit of counseling to be able to get to where I am today with talking about my feelings and to be able to communicate how I feel. And sometimes I still have some difficulties communicating. I do try, and I'm a lot further now than I was back then. Going back to when I was a teenager, a young child, actually, I was violated 5 times since I was the age of 3 until I was 19. When I was older in my young adult life, I was raped. I've been through a lot of different violations by men. With my addictions, the abuse started happening in my home when I was about 14, and that's when I started running away from home. That's when I started using alcohol. I started drinking. I started smoking weed. And from there, I was introduced to other drugs, and the drinking picked up more and more. I didn't feel safe in my home. I tried to leave as much as I could, but because of this new lifestyle that I was entering into, I got in trouble a lot. I was grounded for months at a time sometimes, which opened up that opportunity for the abuse to happen. And then when I was 16, I decided that enough was enough, that I wasn't taking it anymore, and I packed my bags up and I left home. I moved into a party house, and this is when the drinking really picked up because I was living in it. I didn't talk to my family for a year after I moved out. I cut everybody off except for my sister, my oldest sister. After that year went by, I started seeing somebody, and I slowed down on the drinking and the partying, but it was a lot of like mental abuse. So that was my introduction to abusive relationships. I was able to get out of that relationship. And then when I was 18, I moved to Whitehorse. I went to the Yukon College. At the time, it was the Yukon College. Things were good. Things were good for a while. I stopped drinking. I drank very rarely. I got myself into a routine. I started getting into my spiritualities. I would do a lot of meditations. I prayed a lot. I was growing spiritually, and I was doing really well. Started drinking again. I don't know if it was the stress of having my own place for the first time, was going to college for the first time. My grandparents were the ones that helped me to get into my own place. They helped me. They paid for my security deposit to move into my own apartment. The deal was that they could stay there anytime they wanted with me, which of course was worked for me because I loved being with my grandparents. I started drinking more and going to school less, and then I ended up not finishing that term. And I was drinking every day until about 19, just after my 19th birthday. I drank a lot. I remember drinking every day for almost 8 months, and I was sober for maybe a couple weeks out of that 8 months. But I just dove into it, into a life of drinking and drugs. However, every time my grandparents would show up, everybody would get kicked out. I'd make tea, all the alcohol would get put away and everything. So I had that respect for my grandparents that everything would get shut down, everybody would get kicked out, and the house would be aired out, cleaned up, and I would take care of my grandparents while they were there. And I always asked them, before you come, you have to let me know because I always have people at my house. And they said, yeah, we'll tell you, but they never did. They would just show up. I think, I don't know if they found it humorous or whatever, seeing me run around and clean up. But I ended up getting evicted from that place because of my partying and my drinking. And I was pretty good friends with the landlord too, so it was hard for her to evict me at that time. But I understood why she did it. And then I ended up moving into my cousin's place. I sobered up. He helped me to sober up. I remember I started working a part-time job, and I had my first paycheck, and I told him, we're driving around, and I said, can you stop at a liquor store? I just want to get something. And he said, nope, I'm taking you home right now. And I remember being so angry that he took me home. But then the next morning I woke up and I was thankful. So I ended up sobering up for, I think, about a year at that time. And in that time, my parents were moving to Yellowknife for an opportunity, a job opportunity. So I went with them. I worked 3 jobs. I was promoted to assistant manager. I was working at Sands. I learned a lot about business when I was there. And I was there for about a year. My parents left a few months after we got there because things didn't pan out, but I loved my life there, so I stayed. Life was good. Life was really good. It was a year, exactly 1 year after I moved to Yellowknife. I was driving down Main Street. I bought my first car when I was in Yellowknife as well. But I was driving down Main Street. Somebody yelled my name. And in that moment, I thought, I'm done. I'm done in Yellowknife. And that's when I decided to move. And I sold my car and just had my suitcase. And I moved over to Edmonton. I didn't have a place to go to. My friend hooked me up with one of her friends so I could have a place to stay until I got settled, which didn't take long. I was settled within probably about a week. And then I got a job with a marketing company. It was young people. And I remember the day I walked in there after they said I got the job. And they were all young, my age, around 20. And I walked in. Everybody was dressed in their business attire, and there was Eminem blasting in the background. And that's when I was like, okay, this is my place. So I learned a lot about business there. They taught us about marketing, how to present yourself, how to talk with managers. And it was a lot of fun. And I really loved business. And this is when I went for my first massage, supposed to be working, but my supervisor out in the field took me for a massage instead. And that's when I decided that I wanted to have my own spa one day. So, from when I was living in Edmonton, I got a call one day that my Uncle Larry had passed away. So, I went home for the service and the funeral. And then I came back to Edmonton and continued working. 2 months later, I got another call, and my grandma had passed away. I went home again, and I ended up staying home this time because my grandpa had nobody to take care of him. And I was pretty much the only one in the family in a situation where I could take care of my grandpa. So I ended up moving, staying home, and I went back to Edmonton a couple weeks later to go and get my stuff. And I came back and I was doing good at first. I was working two jobs. It was tough during that time taking care of my grandpa. It was because he would sometimes stand there for a long time just staring at my grandma's pictures, and I could feel his pain and how much he missed her. And I tried to do everything to make his life more comfortable. I tried to do things that my grandma would do for him. My first time making bannock, it was rock hard. But I looked over at my grandpa and he opened it and he was eating the inside. So he would never tell me when I did something wrong, but he would just enjoy it the best he could. And I remember when I first moved in with him, silence made me uncomfortable. So I talked a lot. And one day it dawned on me that I didn't need to talk when I was with my grandpa. That just being there with each other was enough for him. And it was enough for me too. So we would just sit there. He would play his cards. I would read my book. My grandma was alive. It was me and my grandma all the time. My grandma and I were very close. We would laugh together all the time. We'd spend a lot of time together. I really loved being with her. So this gave me an opportunity to get to know my grandpa. And I always felt like my grandparents were my parents because of the way that they loved me unconditionally and the way they protected me. I felt safe. I felt safe when I was with them, and I knew I was safe. After about 8 months, I couldn't handle CarMax anymore. And during that time that I was staying there, I got back into drinking again. I'd go out on a weekend, go out for a night, and then I'd come back early in the morning or come back late that night, and I'd take care of my grandpa. I was started talking with a friend that I met in Yellowknife. So I started talking to him when I was in CarMax, and we decided that we were going to try a relationship together. He was in Fort Nelson. He moved over to Whitehorse, and I met him in Whitehorse, and we started our relationship. Things weren't really working out for him in Whitehorse. So we moved to Fort Nelson together. And during that time in Fort Nelson, I wasn't a big drinker yet. I would just go out maybe one night and then have a drink every now and then. We'd go out together. But it wasn't anything that created issues in my life. talked about having a child together, but we agreed that we'd wait a year because we were looking to buy a house. We both had good jobs. We were doing really well. And after we talked about having a child together, I got pregnant a month later. We ended up moving back to the Yukon when I was in, I think I was about 3 months, maybe 4 months pregnant. I wanted to be close to my resources, like my family, because this was my first child. I was terrified. But being close to my mom and my sisters, yeah, it made me feel better about being a first-time mom. And they were there. I'd always go to CarMax and get my mom's help with my baby. And after I had Tanisha, my oldest daughter, her dad, it didn't work out in Whitehorse for him. He couldn't find a job. And he was starting to, it was starting to affect his mental health. So we decided that he was going to move back to Fort Nelson and that I was going to commute back and forth just so I could have the support from my family with Tanisha and we could still be in our relationship. During that time, within the first 6 months of my daughter's life, we started arguing a lot. The commute back to Fort Nelson was good for him, but it wasn't good for me. And so we ended up separating. We argued so much, and I just realized that I didn't want to raise my daughter like that. I ended up leaving him and getting our own place in Whitehorse, and I was raising her, and I was doing good. I'd go out every now and then, but I remember a couple times I was sick. And I'd be laying on my couch for a few days. I just remember thinking, I don't want to be like this. I don't want to do this. So I made smarter choices. I would still go out every now and then, but I would just be a lot more wise in what I would do. Like I stayed away from the drugs and I would just drink. So the next day I would still be able to function, wake up early with my daughter and be the mom that I wanted to be with her. I started up my own business doing bookkeeping when she was just young because I wanted to stay at home with her. I wanted to raise her and not put her in the system. I started putting her in daycare when she was about three. I didn't have to put her in daycare, but I chose to so she can learn to socialize with other kids. And then she started school. And the person that I was with at the time, I was telling him that I wanted to go back to school, and he talked very highly of Victoria. We relocated to Victoria, went to school there at Camosun College for a couple years. My first year, I took upgrading and courses towards the hospitality management program. I was working towards getting the training I needed for my spa. And my first year in the hospitality management program, I got a call that my grandpa wasn't doing well. So it took me 2 days to get home. And the whole time I prayed that he would just wait until I got there. He did. He waited till I got there and sat with him. And 4 hours later, he passed. I just thank God every day that he waited for me. I couldn't talk about it for a decade. After his service, I went out partying. Drank for 3 days. And I remember waking up on the third day. I had no recollection of anything from the past 3 days. And that scared me. So I called my sister and I asked her to drop me off at detox. She dropped me off at detox. And I called her back an hour later and I said, I don't belong here. Come get me. So she came and picked me up. From there, like I got deeper and deeper into my addictions, into the drinking. I had different friends on the weekend than I did throughout the week. I would drink on the weekend with my weekend friends, and I drink on the week during the week with my week friends. And I did that so people wouldn't know how much I drank. I tried to hide it. And I was homeless at that time, staying with friends. It was a tough time. I couldn't talk about my grandpa. I wouldn't talk about my grandpa. Anybody who tried, I'd shut them down. Throughout that 10 years, I just fell deeper and deeper into addictions. And about halfway through that that period I had my baby girl, Kira. She's my youngest. She came at a time where there was a lot of darkness in my life. She was a blessing. She was definitely what my heart needed. My oldest daughter, Tanisha, turned 11. I was really starting to sink into addictions. I was introduced to harder drugs. So I started smoking crack. And my house turned into a flop house. There was people there all the time. The day that she came home was right after I had gotten raped. She came in. I was crying in her room. That's the day she decided to move out with her dad. She walked out, told her dad she was moving out. So my heart broke twice in one day, bigger with my daughter because her and I were always very, very close. And I always put her before everything else. But lately, I wasn't because of my addictions. My addictions were taking over. And after the rape happened, I stayed home for 2 weeks. I did not leave my house. I changed a lot. I was prior to that in an abusive relationship. It's the first time I was ever hit. It was verbally, mentally, emotionally abusive. So I wasn't doing good. I wasn't doing very good at all in life. The people I hung out with were just as into the addictions as I was. And I remember I got evicted. There was just too many people at the house all the time. We weren't quiet or respectful at all. I started working at the mine and I was trying to get my life back together. So I moved in to my mom's and I was staying at my mom's and I was trying to get myself back on track, and things were good for a little while. And then I started doing drugs again, and I would get out of camp and I'd dive into the drugs. I almost got my little girl taken away from me because of my situation. Luckily, my sister was there that she was able to take my little girl. So she took her, and I was so ashamed and angry at myself that I put a bottle of pills in my mouth. And my friend saw me do it, and he smacked the back of my head, and some of the pills came out. And before he could do it again, I ran out the door and I swallowed the pills, and I went running into the bush, and I woke up. I don't know how long later, but I was very delusional. And I started walking and I found a building, a business. And I went in there and I called my brother and I asked him to come get me. So he came and got me and I went and slept it off at his house. Woke up that next morning with Bell's palsy. My body couldn't handle the stress from all the drugs I did. And I didn't know what it was. It scared the crap out of me. I didn't know what was going on with me or my body or why I couldn't move half my face. I went to the nurse, and that's when they told me that I had Bell's palsy and explained what it was. And my parents helped me with trying to get better from it. So I went to acupuncture, I went to see a chiropractor, vitamins that I could take to try to heal it faster. And through that time, I stopped doing drugs, but I didn't stop drinking. And I think that's why my face didn't completely heal. You could still notice it today. When I talk to nurses and doctors about it, they say that's odd because normally it heals. It's a reminder to me of that day. That's a reminder to me of my addictions. And I think that that's the way that the Great Spirit just said that it has to be, right? As a constant reminder of where I came from and where I am today, and the work that I do to be able to help people. Got tired of living at my parents' house, so I found my own place in CarMax. I decided to stay in CarMax, and I got back into the lifestyle of drugs and alcohol, and I started going even further downhill. And I started seeing my girls less and less, started becoming very angry. And I remember one day I woke up and I just knew that I was going to die like this, or I had to change. And I used to daydream about doing things with my girls. That was my wish, was to be able to do stuff with my kids, to have money to do stuff with my kids, to wake up and have my kids home. And I just thought about my quality of life. And I remember looking in the mirror and thinking, I don't know who you are. I don't know who this person is staring back at me. And that's when I decided that I wanted to get help, that I needed to get help because I tried. I tried everything in my power to quit on my own. I tried to write it on my calendar. I'd never get past 8 days. I tried to watch movies about people in recovery and how they sobered up. I tried everything and I couldn't do it by myself. And one of the hardest things that I had to admit to that was I was powerless and I couldn't do it alone. So I called my boss and I asked him if he could help me, that I needed the help. And they booked me into Cedars and told me I was supposed to leave in a couple months. So once I did that, I dove right off. I drank every day for 3 months. I was doing drugs all the time. I had about 5 days, and I was supposed to leave to Cedars when a couple of my cousins went, but I didn't make it. I wasn't ready. So I bumped it, and I ended up going 2 weeks later than I was supposed to go. I sobered up. I let everything run out. I let my money run out. I let the booze run out. I let the drugs run out. I let everything run out about 5 days before I had to go. I did it on purpose so I could detox myself before I had to go. And I was sick. I was pretty sick. But I made it on that plane and I went to Cedars. And I told myself that when I go to treatment, that that was it, that I was going to be done with everything, and that I was going to change my life. So I went with the mentality that I was coming back a different person. I got down to treatment and it was tough, right? The transition, but I'm really happy that I detoxed before because of my anxiety. I would get bad anxiety when I was detoxing and everything was coming out of my system. The first week, it was really tough because they put a big emphasis on God with everything, right? Your higher power. I didn't believe in God. I do believe in the great spirit and the creator, but even that part of my belief was on thin ice because I thought, how could everything happen to me that happened if there was a God? If there, like, where's my protector? But then when I opened my life up to healing, that's when I could feel that he was always there and he was trying to help me. But I just wasn't accepting that help. But when I was ready to heal, everything started happening for me. The right people started coming along. The teachings that I needed to learn were coming along, and they still do today. It's been 3 years, and it's been a windy road. If I said it was easy, I'd be lying. But everything that I've gone through between now and then in my recovery has been worth it. All the healing that I've done, I've learned to forgive. That was a big thing for me, is that I was holding on to a lot of resentments. And I've learned to forgive people. And I've learned to forgive a lot of the people who have hurt me. I've learned to forgive my abusers. And I had to do that for me to be able to move forward in my own life. I've been an angry person for a long time, and it's just recently that I met somebody who has been helping me with my anger to be able to see things in a different way and to let go of that anger. There's a lot more peace in my life. I feel calm. I feel happy. I'm able to communicate better with my kids. And it also opened the door for a deeper sense of self-love. And I'm so grateful for all the people that have come into my life to help me, even if they didn't stay, even if it was just for a little while. But everybody that's come into my life has taught me something. I never, ever imagined in my addictions that I would have a life so beautiful today and that I would have such strong supports. And I'm so grateful. The relationship I have with my girls is, it's a beautiful relationship now. Before, when I first started in my recovery, it was tough. It was really tough. My little girl, Kira, and I would art, we would go head to head. She needed to learn things. I needed to learn things. And we learned those things together. We healed together. We have a very strong relationship today. And my oldest daughter, that was really, really tough because she was my first, and her and I were best friends since she was small. I would tell her everything. I would talk to her about everything, and all that stopped in my addictions. And one day, I think it was about almost a year into my recovery, her and I were sitting there. My Kira was sleeping, and I apologized to her for all the hurt that I brought onto her. And she cried and she cried. But she thanked me for apologizing. And that's when the healing started with her and I. I'm very honest with my girls. I talk to them about addictions. I talk to them about residential school. I tell them that I will only take our healing so far in my generation, that they will have to continue the healing in their generation. I'm telling my story because I'm using it as a healing tool for myself and to let other people know that it's so important for us to learn to use our voice. Because through telling our own story, we could help somebody else. Somebody could relate with our story and decide that they want to get better as well. And I've dedicated my life to helping individuals in recovery, individuals who are fighting in addictions, to be able to come out of their addictions when they're ready to. And I just want to be that voice that maybe helps one person on their healing journey. So our organization's name is like I Onate, and it means fly like an eagle. So we've been up and running for a little bit over a year now. We do help individuals in addictions recovery. We do go to the communities as well to offer healing groups and to offer workshops. We do 2 to 3 workshops, 2 to 3 day workshops in the communities, and we've been to about half of the communities in the Yukon so far. On Saturdays, we are on the land from 12 to 4. We alternate between family reconciliation and adult cultural wellness. We are culturally based, but we are open to anybody who needs our support. And you could be day one in recovery, you could be 2 years in recovery, a trailblazer, or you could be a family member of somebody who is in recovery or who wants to change. You can come and we'll definitely give you our support as well. I am a trained recovery coach. We have 20 trained recovery coaches around the Yukon now. We help people do helper supports, which is sponsors, and we also help you create a recovery plan or a wellness plan. We are located at 412 Cook Street, downtown. And if you want to connect with us, you can reach me at area code 867-333-2497.
What do you see in the future for your program as well as yourself?
I see more growth. We've grown very, very quickly. And for myself, I want to be the best that I can be in regards to the work that I'm doing to help people. Anything that I can do to build my skills, my knowledge and services for the people in the Yukon, that's what my goal is just to be here and to help as many people as I can.
And lastly, Desiree, what would you say you're the most grateful for in your sobriety today?
I am truly grateful that I have my babies back in my life full time, that we have a solid, stable relationship. Because without my healing, I would not be able to create those relationships with my kids and with other people. So I'm very grateful to my healing journey and the individuals who have come along to help me to where I am today, and grateful to the people who are going to come along in the future to help me to get to where I want to be.
Thank you so much for being here today, Desiree, and sharing your story and for all of the work that you do.
Thank you so much for having me, and I really appreciate your time and everything that you've done as well. So, masi chau.
Thanks, Desiree. Take care.
Thank you for listening. If you or someone you know is struggling with addiction, you can get help by calling the Yukon Government Mental Wellness and Substance Use Services at 1-866-456-3838 or by reaching out to Theki Anate Fly Like an Eagle program at 867-333-2497. If you would like to share your story on this podcast, please email recoverystoriesyukon@gmail.com.